This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
From Postcard from the Past and Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is a place where we dig deep into shoeboxes at the top of the wardrobe or under the bed, in attics or cellars, to consider picture postcards and explore what it is that causes us to keep hold of these small cardboard rectangles. Each time, I welcome two guests, and it's their postcards that act as small clues to direct us towards memories, mysteries and stories. I'm Tom Jackson, and I'm delighted to say that today my guests are two writers, Claire McIntosh and Nicholas Royal. Nicholas and Claire, welcome to Podcast from the Past.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Now, Nicholas Royal is the author of 7 novels, 2 novellas, 3 volumes of short fiction. He's also edited 20 anthologies of short stories. And he runs the Nightjar Press, who specialise in producing short stories in signed limited edition chapbooks. But his latest book is White Spines, an unexpectedly compelling, fascinating, reflective, considered memoir of his attempt to collect every one of those white-spined picador paperbacks and his thoughts and observations and reflections along the way. Nicholas joins us today bearing a slightly blurry Manchester postmark. Is that right?
That's right, Tom.
So tell me why that's etched on your skin.
Well, born and brought up in Manchester, and although I went away at the age of 18 to university in London and stayed in London for 20 years, I then went back to Manchester. And now I do that thing that writers often do. I divide my time between Manchester and London.
Yes, the divide your time. Very good. So, Nicholas, do you still send postcards?
I still send postcards. I'm trying to remember the last... Well, no, I suppose is the short answer. And I can't remember the last time that I did send them. Well, OK, I don't send them in the sense that I don't stick stamps on them and send them from, say, holidays. But every time that I send, or most times that I send a book to somebody, which I do very often, I will include a postcard and I will write on the postcard. Does that count?
I think it does. I think okay. The postcard as compliment slip, or high-class compliment slip, durable compliment slip, I think that's very valid. So you still partake in that?
In that case, yes, I send postcards every week.
Oh, that's very good. Well, you're a regular. Yeah. I don't know why you were so diffident.
I've got huge numbers of postcards that I dip into these various different piles of postcards for just the right one for the right person.
And what is the secret of that? How do you match the card to the recipient?
I mean, I have an idea of the recipient in my mind, and I'm looking at the postcards. Mingled with the postcards in some cases are photographs. I've got a large pile of photographs of container ships and other large vessels taken by my late uncle.
Goodness.
And on the back of each one, he's written the name of the ship and the location and date that the photograph was taken. And sometimes people get one of those. Which, and now, I don't know if that counts as a postcard. It's doing the same job as a postcard, but it's like a sort of one-off, limited edition.
Yeah, that's a finite resource. Perhaps. You can't go out and buy more of those.
No, I can't. But I do have a surprisingly large number of them.
And this wasn't where I was expecting to go, but why does your uncle have all? Why did your uncle have all these photographs? Why did he take them?
He'd worked in the Merchant Navy when he was a young man, and either he did that because he loved ships and seagoing, or in that left him with a love of these things. And in later life, having left the Merchant Navy and having been a computer programmer and having stopped doing that, having retired, in other words, he became a keen photographer of ships.
Amazing, amazing. Well, there you are. I didn't expect to be talking about that. Very good. Well, we will find out more about your book obsession a little bit later on. Now, Claire McIntosh spent 12 years in the police force, including time on CID. But these days, she is very much an official, certified, award-winning, best-selling author, with more than 2 million copies of her books sold worldwide. 2 million, that's extraordinary. You might have read I Let You Go, or I See You, or Let Me Lie, or After the End. But her latest is a thriller in the air. It may not be holiday reading. Well, we may not be going on holiday, but it may not be holiday reading if you have to fly for your holiday. But it is gripping, addictive, and actually, I found it very moving. It's the excellent Hostage. Now, Claire comes to us today with I think it's a Paris postmark. Can I just make out the 9th in there?
You can. You can make out the 9th arrondissement, or possibly the 18th. I might be sort of straddling the Boulevard Rochechouart, I think.
I need to get my map out.
Yeah, absolutely. I lived in Paris for a year or so when I was young, and it is just a city that runs through my blood. Every time I get off the train, and I'll always try and go by train if I can. Yes. The second I step onto Parisian soil, I feel like I've come home.
What is it? I think Paris obviously was one that was the great city at the turn of the 20th century. But there's something about Paris that captures the imagination. It's the place you might dream of, I think. What is it about?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think for me, it's actually more about association. So it was right. The first place I lived on my own, the first place I earned my own wage, rented my own apartment, you know, decided where I would go and who with. And so that sort of coming of age period is really important. It could have been that I'd ended up, you know, in Scunthorpe at that critical moment of my life. And so actually my postmark would have been Scunthorpe. It happens to have been Paris.
Oh my God, the luck that has shone on you. Very good, very good. Well, we might even be hearing more about Paris shortly. But Claire, when did you last send a postcard?
Oh, a couple of days ago, I send postcards.
Good work.
All the time. So I send, always send them on holiday. I am ridiculously traditional about holidays. And if we're only away for a very short amount of time, and I know that the postcard will take longer to get back than we will, then it's almost the first thing I do when we come out of the airport. Right, let's go and find a postcard to send home. Having a lovely time, probably. Hasn't happened yet, but I'm sure we will. So always do it from holiday. If I see a postcard that makes me smile or makes me think of a person, then I'll send one. I sent a beautiful, beautiful postcard recently that had beach huts on it and slightly three-dimensional beach huts. And I sent it to an author friend, Veronica Henry, who had just released a book about beach huts. And so I thought that was a nice thing to send to her. But I just, what I love about them is their informality, the fact that I don't have to write a long, long letter. I can just scribble a couple of lines or, thinking of you and pop it in the post. It feels very, very easy and casual, and it doesn't place any burden of expectation on the person receiving it.
Well, I think you're right, and I think those sentiments and that sense of immediacy and simplicity and informality are actually what allowed the postcard to kind of boom so rapidly at the beginning of the 20th century.
Absolutely, and I think it's great that people do still send postcards, or at least that they buy postcards. You know, the cost of stamps is so prohibitively expensive for many people, but that, you know, that's an issue. But you can tell. I mean, I live in Snowdonia, so it's a very, very touristy area. And when I walk down my high street, there are racks and racks of postcards right. for sale outside the shops. And I love seeing that because it tells me that people are still buying postcards.
Yes. Well, and it's, you know, it's still a pocket money souvenir, isn't it? It's cheaper than buying the T-shirt.
It certainly is. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Well, we'll find out more about this. But before we hear about the cards that Claire and Nicholas have brought along, I'll do a quick one of mine. This is like a postcard from the past card, like I do on Twitter and in the book. So here's the first one. This is, it's a black and white multi-view, meaning there's several images on the card. There's five, in fact, in this case, of picturesque South Devon. And Claire and Nicholas have got sort of sheets in front of them with all the different cards we're discussing today. So, you know, they can refer to page whatever it is. But I'll describe it. It's got five images, Dartmouth, Fish Quay in Brixham. The central image is Eastgate in Totnes. Then it's Salcombe and Cockington Forge. Cockington Forge is a sort of postcard staple. Every box of postcards I pick up, there's always one of Cockington Forge, this little sort of picture, what do you call it, a chocolate box, kind of thatched village. Anyway, this particular card, let me see, this was sent in September 1960. So we're going back a bit, actually. And it was sent to Lenham near Maidstone in Kent. It's not signed, but I imagine the person who received it at the Marley Tile Company would have known who it was from. So it's a postcard to work. It was a big thing, sending postcards to work. And so this one says that having a marvellous time, sailing, swimming and lazing about on the beach in scorching sunshine. The best weather so far this year. Only snag is I miss my foam cushion as the beaches are very hard. I think it's an in-joke for the office. I bet this person, when they sit in the office, they sit on a foam cushion. You know, like people have their own favourite cushions in the office and stuff. I don't know. But it just seemed an odd thing to say. You're in the beach. It's lovely weather, the best weather ever. And then... And I've never seen anyone take a foam cushion to the beach either.
Maybe she's got hemorrhoids, you know. I don't think we should mock her.
I wondered if someone would say that.
One of those special ring cushions.
Well, yes, I know exactly what you mean.
How hard are these beaches? I know South Devon really well, and actually I've never been to Cockington Forge, which is something I feel I need to correct. But Dartmouth, Salcombe and Brixham were very much part of my childhood holidays. So I'm sort of racking my brains now to think about just how hard these beaches were and whether as a 7 or 8 year old I was actually subconsciously thinking, if only I had a foam cushion.
And I think it's quite sandy around there, isn't it? It's not like you're dealing with pebbles like at Brighton or something.
No, but clearly very hard sand.
Yes, maybe the tide's just gone out and it's still sort of compacted with... I don't know. Anyway.
I don't even associate Salcombe, where we did go often on family holidays, I don't even associate that with beaches, which may be relevant, or maybe I just don't remember the beach there.
Well, the picture here shows a sort of harbour, I think. Perhaps
that, but, yeah, and but, there are beaches, and I would imagine that in the 60s it was a really glorious place to be, and really quite unspoiled. Nowadays, I mean, it's still lovely, but it's quite she-she, isn't it, Salcombe? It's got all the fancy shops in it.
And I think they've used those special devices to soften the beaches, haven't they, now? So it's all very
almost
fluffy.
Certainly.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's just try one more quickly of this kind. This is a card, also, we're still at the seaside. This is a colour picture now, and it's actually a rather extraordinary shot. It's sort of the high street in Clacton-on-Sea, and they've artfully taken a picture through a kind of municipal flower bed with, I don't think they're poppies, little red flowers. So the whole thing looks like you're looking at an Edwardian English high street through a Dutch poppy field or something, a Dutch tulip field. So the whole bottom of the card is flowers, and then behind it, this high street with the milk bar, perhaps something called Lillian, perhaps it's a hairdresser's. If I have a magnifying glass, I can see the names of all the shops. This one is also from a similar age, let me just see, 1965, a bit later, August 1965. It's a Harvey Barton card. Harvey Barton were a big Bristol publisher. That logo was the bridge across the Severn. And this one's this was sent to Canterbury, Sturry in Canterbury. Actually sent from London, so I think they probably waited till they got home to send it. And it was sent from someone called Jude. And it says, "Dear Mummy and Daddy, I'm having a lovely time. Weather very good yesterday. Coming by coach on Friday night. Hope Dad is much better now. Don't forget buttonhole and Pyrex dishes. I'll get some wrapping paper. Love, Jude." So I'm really intrigued. I'm always intrigued by how much you can get across in how few words. And I'm not quite sure what's going on. The buttonhole suggests to me there's a wedding coming up.
Oh, I hope it's her wedding. I hope it's her. It was her wedding, and they were doing it on a shoestring. And the whole week, everyone's been making vol-au-vents and little cocktail sausages. And someone in the family has gathered up the flowers and made the buttonholes, and it's all very, very low key. And she's racing home to get married.
Well, maybe. And
did you say it wasn't stamped, Tom?
No, it's stamped. It's
okay.
Yeah, no, there's a stamp on it, and it's August 1965, sent at 3:45 p.m. actually, on 4th of August. It's arrived, I think. It was posted in London, I think, rather than posted in Clacton. But the Pyrex dishes...
Looking through my old postcards, I found some that I had sent either to my parents or to grandparents... that had never been stamped. So presumably I'd written them on holiday. They'd never been stamped. I'd carried them home, and I've still got them.
Ah. Well, there is a certain sadness or certain melancholy to that. I do go through boxes and boxes of thousands and thousands of cards, and it's not unusual to find cards where they've been addressed and no message written and gone nowhere near a postbox, which is very much good intentions. Or even half a message written, and then they've run out of things to say and not sent it.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of relieved when I see that, because I know I've been guilty of that. You know, there are times you think, oh, I better send that. Oh. And it's a really, it's quite a profound feeling of guilt not to have completed sending a postcard, I find.
Very much. I must say, I love the architecture of those buildings on the high street there, Pier Avenue in Clacton-on-Sea, which strike me as being somewhat Flemish in design, which makes sense,
in essence,
given that it's just across the channel.
You're right. At the top, they're all sort of, they go into a little peak, don't they?
Yeah.
It's brilliantly composed, I think. I love this postcard. I think you were slightly mocking of it.
Affectionately.
Well, maybe. I think it's glorious. I love the colours, which actually look weirdly contemporary. So it's almost as though someone has put it on Instagram and applied, one of those clarity filters that makes it quite vibrant. I'm fairly confident that Clacton-on-Sea didn't look quite so vibrant as that. But I think it's a great postcard.
Well, I'll remind everyone at home, images of these cards, including the marvellous flower display in Clacton, are going to be on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can see that we're not making it up, and we're not just indulging in flights of fancy. Now, Nicholas and Claire, you've both been kind enough to dig out for us some postcards of your own. Let's start with you, Nicholas. Now, there's a couple of cards you've prepared for us. And they mm-hmm. and they have something very specific in common, don't they?
They do. They are what I call inclusions. Now, an inclusion is normally a word used to apply to an insect or a piece of bark that might have been caught in amber, might have been caught in the resin when it was setting, and that becomes amber. And so I use the word to describe things that you find, or things that, well, things that I find and things that lots of us find in secondhand books, because I am forever hunting through secondhand bookshops and charity shops. And for a long time, for many years, I would find the occasional inclusion inside a book and hang on to it. And then in the last couple of years, it's become one of the sort of compulsions that I feel in regard to book collecting, so that now very often I'll be looking specifically for that telltale little sort of shadow line that you get in yes. in the text block of a book, when you can see, when looking down on the top edge of the book, you can see that there's something there. And so of course
you're hunting, and you're hunting within yeah. what you're hunting. It's sort of
yes.
going down a what do they call it? A mise en abîme of looking for stuff.
Mise en abîme, exactly. And that little black line that suggests there's something there, of course, can be just a page turned, you know, the top corner of the page turned. But then if you're lucky, it's not, and there's something there, and it's an inclusion. And I've found all sorts of things, photographs, bus tickets, little memos, business cards, boarding cards, train tickets, love letters, wow. and of course postcards. So I've got one here that was found in a book at page 91 of Farewell Fond Dreams, Fictions by Giles Gordon.
Okay.
And this was published in 1975.
So you've got the book in front of you?
I've got the book in front of me, because brilliant. I always keep brilliant. The inclusion in the book, and I
yes.
keep it at the exact page
yes.
where I found it. And I make a note so that if I take it out, as I did just a moment ago,
yes.
I won't experience the little moment of panic that I did just experience. And then I remembered it was page 91.
Excellent.
And this, Giles Gordon is one of my favourite writers. And this is one of his collections of short stories. And he's signed it in the front of the book, Paddy and Doolan, D-U-L-A-N, with much love, Giles, 24th February 1975. I paid either 16 or £6 for it, it's not clear which, from Barter Books in Alnwick in Northumberland. Anyone who's not been to Barter Books, who is interested in bookshops, secondhand books, or even just converted railway stations, because that's what it is, has a great treat in store. It's one of the best secondhand bookshops in the country. And on one visit there several years ago, I found a few books by Giles Gordon. They'd obviously all been acquired together, and they were all signed to Paddy and Doolan,
right.
Both of whom are deceased. I found out who they were, Paddy Kitchen and Doolan Barber. Paddy was a novelist, and she married Doolan. Doolan was her second husband. Doolan was also a writer. So the postcard is a postcard of St. Mawes in Cornwall.
Yes.
And it was posted in 1974... in Falmouth, where, as well as going to Salcombe on holidays when I was a child, we often went to Falmouth as well. Basically, if we didn't go to Salcombe, we went to Falmouth or Foye. And the postcard is addressed to All, ALL, at 4 Holyport Road, London, SW6, 6LZ. This is in Fulham, and I intend to go and have a look. I've already had a look on Street View. But I do intend to go and have a look. And I mean, if I were feeling bold, at some point I might write to them and see if there's any connection yes. with the past.
So is this where, was this sent to Paddy and this Doolan?
Well, this is what I don't know, because it's addressed to, that's the gap. It's addressed to all at this address in Holyport Road, and there's no salutation. It just goes straight into it. And I think I think it's a woman's writing. Obviously, I might be wrong. And let's say she writes, "I had meant to take a break up the Fal to Truro, but they're only running 1 p.m. trip now, so came here instead on the ferry. You get a magical view of Falmouth, and it was very calm and a nice feeling to be on the sea again. I felt very sad not to be able to gather up an armful of mackerel at 4p each that they're selling in St. Maur's Harbour for P&P, though I suppose they wouldn't recognise fish with heads and tails. Love, P." So there are three P's here. The sender of the card is called P, and she is talking about two other people called P&P. Now, I'm guessing that P&P, I thought at first they sounded like children, but I don't know.
Cats.
Cats?
Pepper and Poppy or
so they eat fish. I get you. That could certainly be cats. That's a very good idea, Claire. I like that.
And they have cat food that doesn't look like fish, normally.
Yes, exactly. So because it's signed P, I just can't help thinking that it might be Paddy Kitchen, the writer of the card.
Sending it back home.
Yes, exactly. It's a possibility.
Gosh. But do you want to know all the details, or do you like not quite knowing?
Well, that's a very good question, Tom, actually, because sometimes I do start digging and I do a little bit of detective. I mean, what I like is to conjecture and to imagine and to come up with my own theories. And I like things being ambiguous. I like that in fiction, when I write fiction, and I like it in this scenario as well. And occasionally, so for instance, I found something inside a book that I bought in Chorlton Oxfam Bookshop near me in South Manchester. That mentioned Emma, and then it had some notes on it about some curtains from a curtain designer and some measurements. And now I know an Emma, I work with an Emma at the university where I work, and I know that she lives in Chorlton, and I've even seen her twice in the Oxfam bookshop. So I asked her if it was her, and she said that it wasn't. So that immediately kind of spoilt some of that, took some of the fun out of that and spoiled the mystery. So there is a part of me that doesn't want to go to Holyport Road or write to Holyport Road and find out, you know, if Paddy and Doolan have surviving family members in it, because there may be no story there.
Yes. Also, there is.
So I don't know is the answer.
You can never really go back. You can never really bring that moment back to life. You can only find out a series of sort of cold facts about it, and there's an extent to which how much more fun will that be? I don't know, because I sometimes think about all the names on all the postcards I've got, but that is almost a vision of madness to be able to try and make sense of all of them. So I sort of see them as just sitting there vibrating with meaning, some of which I can hold on to, but most of which will just disappear into the ether, and I can never. Yes. I just have to enjoy the aroma of it or the aura of it.
Exactly. There's no way, I don't think, that I would be able to investigate any further into the identities of the people involved in the other inclusion that I've got here, which is a postcard. It's an art postcard depicting the Thames at Westminster Bridge in 1906, a painting by André Derain, D-E-R-A-I-N, whose dates were 1880 to 1954, it says here. And
amazing
the
picture.
Card, it is a nice picture. And I know that view from the South Bank. The postcard it's very short, and it wasn't sent through the post like this. It was obviously put in an envelope or something. Well, it was put in an envelope with the book I found it in, I assume, which is Cormac McCarthy's All the Pretty Horses. And I found it at page 151. And it was dated January 1994. And it says, "My dearest Kate, please, please forgive me. I am so sorry. I am on my knees begging you. Hope you feel better. The book is one I haven't read, but everyone says it's great. Love you lots. And then I think the signature is Adam.
Yes. So what's Adam done?
There's a sort of, well, what has Adam done? That's the mystery. And there's a strange sort of change of tone. One minute he's on his knees begging her, and the next minute, hope you feel better. The book is one I haven't read, but everyone says it's great.
Yes.
Love
a change of tone because he has no sincerity whatsoever. And I'm afraid Kate did not even read that book. She pushed the card back in. It went straight to the charity shop, and she is absolutely not going to forgive him. In fact, they haven't spoken since January 1994.
It is a strange one, isn't it? Because if you've had a row with someone, the last thing you're going to do is suddenly read a book they're recommending. Because you think, I'm sick of you, and now I'm going to spend X number of hours sort of indulging in a work of fiction that you think is good. I just think that's just, no, go for a walk.
Yeah. I was just looking to see if I have a note somewhere about where that came from, but it's not immediately. I think I didn't write about it in the book because I've got many, many more such inclusions and books with messages in that I didn't include in White Spines.
Just one more thing on this notion of inclusions. You've noted the page where these are kept.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
That often to me would... If I look on my own bookshelves and I find a bookmark in a book, it's normally a sign of failure because that's where you got to when you didn't get any, unless you've marked a particularly interesting place. But normally it's, I got this far, I had a run-up, I got to page 253, and then it kind of went no further. But I felt bad, so I didn't throw the book away or put it in the charity shop.
Yeah.
I'll come back to that. So are the bookmarks and the inclusions, are they at the place where the book gets dull?
Well, it could be as simple as, for instance, I was reading Donna Tartt's The Secret History not long after it came out, and
like everyone else,
although I was enjoying it, I found it fairly compelling, but at the same time I found it wearying simply because of its length. And I think it was around about that time that I started to tire of long books,
right,
and to long for shorter books and shorter novels. And for some reason, there was some distraction that took me away from it towards the end of the book. And I never went back to it. And I was probably only about 50 pages from the end, but I didn't quite feel enough need to go back and finish it. So I never did.
And so there's a bookmark or a postcard in there somewhere, is there?
There probably is, yeah.
You see, the first thing I do if I'm getting rid of a book, which I try not to do because I try and keep all my books, but if I'm getting rid of it, I will flick through and make sure I've left nothing in it.
Yes.
I hate the idea that even something like a train ticket that represents a piece of my life is going to be dissected, actually,
by evidence.
People like you.
Yeah, well,
I know what you mean, and I tend to flick through before getting rid of a book. Clearly, an awful lot of people don't. And then beyond that, I'm amazed at the number of, say, volunteers at Oxfam or secondhand booksellers who acquire these books and put them on their shelves. Are they not flicking through? And if they are they not removing things? And I have to say, I'm really, really glad they're not, because it provides me with so much pleasure.
I know from my librarian friends that there are the most peculiar things found, used as bookmarks, banknotes and bacon rashers and pieces of ties and all sorts of things.
Well, somebody told me on Twitter yesterday that they found a live centipede in a book. Now, what was it? A Barry Lopez novel, I think.
A centipede of discerning taste. I mean, presumably that's down to the centipede. I can't actually imagine someone going, oh, damn it, I'm in bed, I haven't got my bookmark. Oh, I know.
Reach out.
I'll just use my pet centipede.
I'll free it in the morning, it'll be fine. Very good, very good. Well, thank you for your introduction to the world of inclusions, Nicholas. That's really illuminating. Claire, what's the first postcard that's landed on your doormat?
Okay, so this one, it is not an inclusion. This was given to me personally. It didn't come through the post. It is a Shakespearean postcard, although not from Shakespearean times. So it's produced by an artist called Louisa Hare. It's a first folio card, and her first folio cards are glorious things. They're very sort of tactile, almost rustic looking, and they're letter block printed.
Oh, very nice.
She's based sort of somewhere near Stratford, and they are, I think she has other types, but she has a big, big range of Shakespeare cards. And this particular one features a scene from Twelfth Night. It's one of my favourite scenes from Twelfth Night. It's Malvolio, and the card is all black and white, except for his stockings, which are, as anyone who's read Twelfth Night or seen it will know, are yellow, because this is the moment where he's been sent a letter purporting to be from his beloved Olivia, asking him to wear yellow stockings for her. And of course, he turns up and all his mates laugh at him, which is
cross-gartered, is that it?
Cross-gartered, that's right, yeah. And at the bottom of this card, it says, some are become great, some achieve greatness, and some have greatness thrust upon them, which is an excellent quote. And this card was given to me by my A-level English teacher, Mrs. McDonald. And she was a brilliant teacher. And when we left school to do, you know, ready for our exams, she gave each of us a card with a very personal message on it.
Lovely.
And my message says, "Well, Claire, are you headed for greatness? Remember me when you're famous. Let's hope the Shakespeare paper has helped you on the way. You must promise to come back and see me. Much love, Mrs. McDonald." Needless to say, I never did go back and see her. And actually, truth be told...
You can edit that bit out, don't worry.
I had forgotten all about this card. It had gone in my box of memories. Yes. And then not so long ago, I was looking for something else, something from my police days. And I found this card. And I looked at the picture, first of all, and I thought, oh, I'd forgotten how much I love that quote and how accurate it is. And then I read the message and I thought, well, you know, I'm not famous, but I think Mrs. McDonald would be quite pleased, actually.
You're getting away with it.
I was, that I'd become a published author and sold a couple of million books. So I don't know if Mrs. McDonald is still around, but she certainly inspired me to enjoy literature and to write books. So that's quite a special card, and it looks great too.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think if you're looking for arguments why sending that postcard rather than not sending that postcard is a good thing, I think if that gave you a push over the line, that's got to be a good thing, hasn't it?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we can all remember teachers who, you know, left a positive impact on us and made us feel that we could achieve great things. I'm sure that Mrs. McDonald would have done that for every single one of her students every year that she taught.
Even the absolutely hopeless ones.
Even the hopeless ones, maybe especially the hopeless ones.
Yes, yes.
Because they're the ones who really needed it. And I just, you know, they're busy people, aren't they, teachers? And actually writing individual postcards is a really lovely thing to do.
It
so
is.
I shall treasure this one.
Sometimes...
Go on.
Sorry, Tom. Sometimes teachers, of course, are able to inspire you not by deliberately encouraging you. For instance, my English teacher, Peter Craze, who once memorably said to me, "Yes, Nick, literature is a matter of opinion, but you're wrong and I'm right."
Yes. And what do you think about what he said?
I couldn't disagree with him. He's especially now. He's gone, sadly.
One thing that surprises me about this card. Now, maybe I'm just misremembering it, but the quote that you tend to hear is "Some are born great, some achieve greatness, and some have greatness thrust upon them." Because that makes sense that you have three different. But this is "Some have become great." How's that different from having greatness thrust upon you?
Well, I would suggest that becoming great is something that you do selves that you develop into. So you're just, it's sort of your natural development. Okay. And then achieving is working towards it, and yes, having it thrust upon them is sort of almost against your will.
I think this is nicer, actually. I think you're right, because if you're born great, that's just a bit unfair.
It's also a bit unlikely.
The king is born great.
I like my three children very much, and they've got many redeeming qualities, but I don't think they were born great. Right, I mean, right, to be honest, right. they were born
lovely.
A bit squally and, often irritating. So
yes,
I think probably becoming great is more realistic.
No, and I suppose if you're a teacher as well, sending this, you're very much about bringing out of people, about developing people. It's not, if a genius walks into your class, it's a bit tedious, job's done.
Oh, and can you imagine how annoying they'd be to teach?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And do you think this designer is still out there making cards like this?
Oh, she is. Yeah, she is. She's got a huge range, and brilliant. I absolutely love them.
Brilliant. And obviously I just got a scan in front of me. It's on a sort of heavy stock, is it, the card?
Yeah, it is. It's a really beautiful sort of thick paper. It's not really card. It's thick paper, and it's all. It is actually machine printed, but the feel of it, the look, is very much as though someone is sitting there with a wooden letterbox
type thing,
pressing them out. They're all slightly wonderful, different, they're beautiful cards.
I will do another quick postcard from the past card now. This is a card of Bulls Park College in Hartford, a sort of institutional building, rather artfully photographed, actually, with a sort of a tree framing it on across two sides, a sort of dangle on the above it. It's a black and white card, and it was sent in 1975. A rather aggressive stamp on it, a Frank on it, saying, "Remember to use the postcode." I think postcodes were big news in 1975. And this is sent from someone who calls herself Aphrodite in the Pink Nighty. Now, I'm not I'm not convinced that's her name, or that she's necessarily dressed in the said item. And it's sent to Miss B. Bevan of Winchmore Hill, London, and this is very much in the genre of the teenage girl postcard. Whenever I'm going through boxes of postcards, if I find cards from teenage girls, I know they're always going to be sort of funny and larky and lots of sort of teasing jokes. Teenage boys don't send postcards, so they don't really exist. But they're always, and they're kind of silly and jokey in a way that that postcards aren't when you're younger, and they aren't when you're older. Teenage girls always was a bit of fun. So she says, "Dear Bino and family," so Bino Bevan, that must be her nickname, a bit of all right up here then. This postcode thing has got rather in the way. Something about on the grounds this morning after Brekkers until I started to get stuck in the quick mud. Lots of girls were up here last night, so it's certainly swinging! Rowena's just put her new contact lenses in. This is cutting-edge technology in 1975. And Sue's making a picture. Anyhow, I'm off to work. Borrow your car Friday? Love from Aphrodite in the Pink Nighty. 4! Two kisses. And then I've got Winnie the Pooh. 2! So the sort of private language between these friends makes it completely incomprehensible, really. They're having fun. She's having a laugh. But I've really no idea what she's talking about. I don't know if you can make any sense out of that.
But, Tom, what about the blue arrow?
This is the best thing about this, but I can't believe you've not mentioned it.
Yeah,
Tell us about the front of it.
Quite. There's an intervention on the front, as I believe they're referred to. We've had inclusions. These are interventions where she's put an arrow onto the sort of attic room, I suppose, a blue arrow, but no mention is made. It doesn't say my room is marked with an arrow or You know, this is where we're staying. So she's obviously just done it. But maybe you don't need to. Maybe it's obvious. An arrow means that's where I am. It doesn't mean that's where I climbed this morning or, you know, that's where the plane crashed.
Oh, just, I think it absolutely does. It's Aphrodite in the pink nightie. What fun. Rowena hadn't put her contact lenses in the night before. Couldn't really see anything. They ended up on the fire escape, on the roof. What japes.
Yeah. And they're all in hospital now.
Lol.
Lol, yeah. Lol before there were lols.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, and I wonder why, you know, why Balls Park College. I'm frantically sort of Googling as we're talking to find out if someone was working there, but it seems to have been a private house until 1946. What's the date of the card?
1975.
Marvellous. In which case, this is a teacher training college. So we've got young teachers. Do you think they
Good
were?
God.
They
she's
were
a bit
in
older
training
than I thought.
There.
Yeah, wow. She's acting like she's about 16. She's probably 17.
Well, she says
19.
She's going to work, doesn't she?
Yeah, yeah. And they got the car as well. So she's got to be 17. Yeah. She's just having a lark. Yeah, no, she's perhaps a bit older than I thought. Well, that's probably why she could afford the pink 90.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You're listening to Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast, and my guests today are writers Claire McIntosh and Nicholas Royal. Now, here's a surprise. We've received a postcard, and it's a postcard of Chartres Cathedral, and it's from Julia Edwards of Cheshire, and she says the answers are 1, Queen Victoria, and 2, Hollyoaks. Sorry, Julia, they're the wrong answers. We'll continue with the postcard stories. Now, Nicholas, what's the second card you've got for us? This is something that you've framed up, am I right?
Yes. My favourite artist, my favourite Belgian surrealist, but he is also my favourite artist.
He's in some competition there as well.
Yes. There are a surprising number of Belgian surrealists, but Paul Delvaux is the one who takes the biscuit. For me, he lived a long life. 1897 to 1994. And I became a big fan of his work in 1980 when I was 17, and I was given for Christmas, I think, a copy of a single by Bauhaus called Dark Nice. Entries. And on the cover was a painting. And it was credited on the back as being part of a painting called Venus Asleep by Paul Delvaux. And it said Tate Gallery. Now, being very naive, I just imagined that it would be hanging on the wall in the Tate Gallery.
Right.
And so at some point went to London in the hope of finding it, and there it was. It happened to be hanging on the wall. And so anyway, I became a big, big fan of Paul Delvaux. He paints these scenes, sort of classical architecture, moonlit cityscapes, and there's always these women who appear to be walking in their sleep through these landscapes,
right.
These cityscapes, often asleep. Sleepwalking is that's the look. So I used to write letters to people who I was particularly whose work I admired, fan letters, I suppose could call them. And I wrote one to Paul Delvaux. I probably sent it in around about 1991 when I was trying to write about him in fiction. Right. And I didn't expect to hear back, but I did hear back. And he sent me a postcard of one of his later works and he signed it on the back. So he didn't write anything else. He just signed the postcard. And it actually came back from the manager or administrator or director of the museum devoted to his work in St. Edersbald right. in Belgium. And so I framed it and I acquired another copy of the postcard so that I could frame both the reverse side, which he had signed, and the image.
So the image is a subsequent purchase?
Yes.
Because you can't see both. That's the point.
Exactly. So if I were to turn it over, the reverse of the card that has his signature on, you would see the same image as the other card. But foolishly, I having framed it, I hung it on the wall, and didn't take any precautions to avoid fade, and the signature has completely 100% faded. You can still see the impression. He obviously used a ballpoint, and you can still see the impression of the ballpoint pen on the card if you look very carefully.
What colour was the ink?
It was blue, I think.
Because it's really gone, isn't it? I mean, it's...
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
You couldn't have hidden it better. The sun has just done it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awful. And also my sort of takeaway point from this, because I sign everything from, you know, checks to books to autographs for my millions of autograph hunters in ink with a fountain pen.
Right.
But clearly I should take a leaf out of his book and use a biro so that at least the indentation is still there. Because otherwise all those collectors of my signature will be devastated in years to come.
Yes,
unless it
disappears before their eyes.
Yeah. But then maybe the kind of ink you're using, Claire, lasts longer. Maybe it will last forever.
I don't know. I'm a bit of an ink fiend. I'm using one at the moment called Writer's Blood.
Oh, wow. What colour is that?
Well, it won't surprise you to know that it's a sort of bloody colour. It's
really?
brownish red. It's
good.
Excellent.
Lord.
Yeah, it's.
Using that for signatures. You're not writing a book in that.
Well, I write all my books on the computer, but I do all my planning longhand, and my sort of I have a book to the right of my computer, which has my daily to do lists, and I use my fountain pen for that with all the
Very
time.
Good. And do you use different coloured inks, or is this just the set ink you're using at the moment?
I mix it up. I normally have a green. I've got a really beautiful Edelstein ink in a jade colour, and that's my favourite. But I bought Writer's Blood at a crime writing festival at the weekend, so I'm using that now.
Very good. Oh, and was it a hot seller at the festival?
It was, yeah, it was. And all my sort of postcards and letters, I'll always use a fountain pen.
Very good. I must say, I think it's the daylight is the issue here, isn't it? I think that's what has destroyed it. And if you keep things closed up, the ink will pretty much stay forever.
But there's a sadness in that, isn't there? You know, I like the fact that when I went to go and look for Venus Asleep in the Tate Gallery, it was hanging on the wall. And there's sadness to the thought of that great painting, and as many great paintings are, just sort of sitting in a vault. So I could have kept this postcard hidden away, and it would have not have faded, but I wouldn't have been able to look at it every day.
You get that thing in some galleries or museums, particularly sort of small ones, where there's a little curtain in front of certain things. That's always very exciting. That makes it feel very special.
But now I'm with you, Nicholas. I mean, it is tragic that the signature has faded, except that the impression is there, and also you know he signed it, he touched it.
Yeah.
And I hate the idea of keeping anything for best. Whether it's, you know, books that you can't touch, or pictures in vaults, or even, you know, best crockery, or a bracelet that you don't want to lose. I think life is short, and we all need to enjoy the lovely things if we're lucky to have them.
I think you are completely. I think it's very easy not to do that, and I think you're absolutely right, Claire. I think that's something that I'm not very good at. Oh, I won't wear that yet. I'll just keep that. What are you keeping it for, you idiot? What are you expecting to happen? What is this thing? When's this day going to arrive?
Yeah.
Very good. Well, look, thank you for sharing Delvaux's evanescent signature. That's something quite... There's something surreal about that in itself, the signature that isn't there.
Yeah.
Ceci ne pas un signature.
yes.
Something like that. And now, Claire, what's the final card you've got for us today?
I love that you've done it in this order. Talk about from the sublime to the ridiculous. this card is possibly one of the most hideous cards I have ever seen.
Thank God you said that.
And this is why I've chosen it, because I went through a period of time when I would deliberately seek out really ghastly cards and send them to people. And this one, actually, I haven't sent. It's blank on the back, but it's within a collection of other awful cards. And I bought it in Paris, and it's so I will say the artist, because I don't think this is the artist's fault exactly. So this is a design by the illustrator Serge Bloch, who has got work in hundreds and hundreds of books and across card ranges. but let me describe this. This is a white background, very, very cheaply produced card. And we've got a pen and ink drawing of a couple walking arm in arm, a man and a woman. They've got very haughty, supercilious expressions. They're obviously going to a very fancy restaurant in a very Parisian way. And vertically on the left-hand side, sort of running next to the woman's body, is "C'est Paris" in a sort of handwriting, I suppose. But that's not what makes this card hideous. What makes it hideous is that after presumably drawing these people, the artist perhaps an advisor, I like to think that he was out for lunch with a friend who had no artistic ability or integrity, and the friend said, you know what would really make this image better is if you took this clip art picture of the Eiffel Tower and put it on top of the woman's head like it was her hat.
Genius.
And so Serge did that, and then the friend said, yeah, it's still not quite enough. I think what you need is to turn upside down another of those clip art Eiffel Towers and use one as an umbrella. And so the man is sort of leaning on an umbrella, which is the Eiffel Tower. And then the friend has said, oh, I know, quick, more wine. Encore du vin. Let's have one as the man's tie. And then they get through another pichet of wine. And then just before they finish their lunch, and we think that we're safe, the friend says, you know what you should do? You absolutely should do this, Serge. You should use two tiny, tiny Eiffel Towers as the woman's heels. And if you look very carefully at the bottom left-hand corner of this card, she is indeed walking on two Eiffel Towers. It's quite the most awful, awful, ghastly, ugly card that I've ever seen. And so I kept it.
I completely can see that productive creation process you describe. I can see that happening. And the heels, there's not even any point because you can't see them.
You can't see them. They are actually sort of, you know, very, very poor sizing. She wouldn't be able to walk at all. And in fact, you know, proportionately, her feet are very, very small compared to her hips and the rest of her. So I worry that she's storing up bunions for her in her later years.
Les bunions de Paris. Were you going to send this to someone, or did that happen? Or
do you know, I wish I could remember. I still do it to some extent. I will collect terrible cards and then serve them up to people if they're feeling a bit glum, because I think nothing cheers you up more than getting an awful card through the post.
Well, there's a certain energy.
I think you're being very, very harsh, actually. I think the umbrella is genius.
Oh, yeah,
I think if he had just stopped at the umbrella.
At the umbrella, yeah.
It might have worked. It's still ghastly and cliched and horrible. It's the proliferation of Eiffel Towers that makes this card truly, truly awful.
You don't think it's a rather clever comment on the sort of fetishization of the Eiffel Tower in all iconography of Paris? And he says, "C'est Paris." You know, is that all we are? Are we just the Eiffel Tower everywhere? Is there no more to us than that?
That is hilariously insightful, but absolutely not the case.
I think maybe I'm drawn to this postcard more than you are, Claire, because
make an offer.
I see myself in the spectacled, shaven-headed, well-dressed man.
I don't believe you are as supercilious as he is. I tell you what. One of the reasons why I was drawn to this card is because this is a little known fact that I don't think I've ever mentioned in any interview. So I worked in Paris for a while, and I was very young. I've lived in Paris twice, and this particular time I was 17, 18, and I worked in a hotel for a while. And then I found myself without a job, but not quite ready to come home. I was due at university a few months later, and I got a job selling art on the street. And you'll know if you've been to Paris that there are often paintings for sale on street corners, along with hats, you know, with umbrellas on them and all sorts of other gadgets. Anyway, this was the gig. At 9 o'clock in the morning, I would have to go to a particular location, hand over a small amount of money to receive these paintings that I would then sell as though they were mine for a little bit more money. And I did this for about 3 weeks, along with all the other tradespeople, and we used to have to keep it in turns to keep watch for the gendarme, because you weren't allowed to do that, and you'd stamp your foot very loudly and everyone would run away. But what I discovered in doing this is that I'm not a saleswoman, but B, I couldn't really sell these paintings, which were awful, unless I pretended that I was French. And so as soon as I said to people, I did this painting myself this morning in my attic, then I was able to sell it. But if you look very closely, because all these paintings had been done for, you know, less than minimum wage by people who had never been to Paris, you'd have a quite a good technical picture of the Eiffel Tower. But around it would be sort of, dirt streets and the occasional elephant. There was no actual understanding of what the city looked like. It was a very extraordinary experience, and one I'm not keen to repeat. But this postcard reminds me very much of those paintings and of that time in Paris.
Very good. To go back to your street painting gig, were you sort of at the front end of a huge organised crime ring? I'm asking out of general interest.
Okay, so I don't think so. I mean, we have to remember that I was only 17, 18, and perhaps not as worldly wise as I could have been. I think it was more, I mean, I suspect the paintings themselves came from people that were not possibly very well paid or looked after. And with the hindsight that I have now and the sort of the maturity of my years, it is not a situation I would want to encourage now. But I think the only crimes that were committed really by myself and my fellow street traders were trading without a license. And even with my police head on, I think I would let us off that. It was a hugely fun time working around the Sacré-Cœur and other touristy places.
It's a fantastic thing to have done. Maybe not to do, but to have done.
Yeah, absolutely. Isn't that so true of most of our lives, though?
Yeah. And just one, I sound a bit obsessed. Were these pictures, did they have a lot of impasto, you know, that have piled up paint? Were they thick?
Yeah, they were very, very...
Never mind
very
the quality,
sort of
feel the width,
rich,
you know.
Rich oil paintings, lots of colours, all the colours. We'll use all the colours. And, of course, often they would have two very, very famous Parisian monuments in the same picture, even though, of course, you know, Notre Dame is nowhere near the
Double
Tour Eiffel.
Value.
Just let's cram in as much as we can and never mind that the people don't look like they're Parisian.
I think I bought one of these paintings, but probably 15 or 20 years earlier.
No refunds.
I think it had been running for a long, long time, this scam.
Oh, it has, absolutely. Years and continues to run.
Yeah.
Well, now I think all those paintings in those cities are all painted in China.
Yeah. I suspect that a lot of them, I suspect a lot of them were China or India, or because that's exactly why the background just wasn't quite right sometimes.
Right.
So actually the paintings themselves were really, you know, quite good. There was some talent there in terms of presenting, you know, you can imagine the artists being given perhaps postcards of the Eiffel Tower and said, right, there you go, paint that. And they would paint that, but they would paint it within the context of their own environment.
Brilliant. Well, there's a whole subgenre, isn't there? These sort of transnational kitsch paintings that come from somewhere and go somewhere. Someone should put a book out about them, not me. But there's a publisher in the room, so maybe. Very good. Well, look, thank you both so much for sharing these cards with me. As I say, I never know where the cards will send us. And they were really, really interesting and odd, the things that came from them, so I'm delighted about that. Another quick reminder for everyone at home, images of these cards, you can look at the one of the Eiffel Tower people through your fingers. They're all going to be on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk. And now before we let Claire and Nicholas back to their real worlds, it's customary for us to end the show with one of these special things. Now, in the normal days when we're in the studio, I'd hand it across and with a quizzical expression and hope that they would have some interesting responses. But we're going to have to look at our sheet. But the last card on your dope sheets is a very brightly coloured card. I don't know if you could describe this to us, Nicholas.
It's a birthday card. And what we see are some bunny rabbits. Basically, there's a mummy bunny rabbit, and she is playing, she's hosing down a sort of ring of children bunny rabbits who are trying to avoid the jets of water coming from her hose pipe.
If they were people, they'd be squealing with delight, or children, rather.
Yes.
But they don't, they just look rather unhappy about it to me.
They look, slightly unhappy. I like the robin in the bottom left-hand corner.
Yes. Yeah, well, maybe the robin's crept in a bit like one of the elephants in Claire's Paris pictures. It's from a different picture. Well, I probably don't need to explain, but you'll see a little white dot in the middle of the picture of the postcard. That's because this is a postcard that also functions as a gramophone record. You can play it on a record player. Which is a good trick. It's a big one. It's just double the size of a normal postcard, perhaps a bit more, actually. So if I ask young Tom back at Wardour Studios very nicely, he's made a digital file of this for us from a record player, and we can see if we can listen to the postcard.
On your birthday. This is amazing.
Oh, it's a bit scratched, I think.
This yeah, I can see the grooves now.
Incredible.
It's funny how I couldn't see the grooves before.
Well, obviously, under the, you know, if you have the thing in your hand, it's obvious. So the grooves are stamped into the kind of glossy surface of it.
Yeah. Yeah, they run across Mummy Bunny's face.
Exactly, exactly. They look intact, but it is a bit scratchy, this one.
I love this. So what would be the modern equivalent of this, then? What on earth would we send that someone can both see?
You get the cards that just make a digital tune, don't you? You open them up and Elvis sings. It's a bit like that.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I do like a multi-functioning card. I have a card that I haven't sent yet, a postcard, that is made of very thin wood. And you can pop out the pieces and put together a boat. And I haven't decided who to send that to yet, but it's a beautiful card.
No, I think that's great.
I'm trying to read the signature. It looks like Jeffrey Robinson.
It's definitely Rosten. A Rosh something.
Yeah.
It's a. Oh. That's it. We've fallen off the edge. It's
no fade out there.
That party ended rather suddenly.
Well, I love that. That is glorious.
As we bathe in the reflected memory of the sprinkling bunny rabbits, who have now ceased to rotate at 33 and a third revolutions per minute. That's it. This time on Podcast from the Past, I'd very much like to thank my first class guests for sharing the postcards from their past, Nicholas Royal and Claire McIntosh. Thank you both.
It's been such a pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you for listening. Bye for now. You can see more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. Do follow me at Past Postcard. And you can buy the book, Postcard from the Past, by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardorstudios.co.uk.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.